Reading is from the Gospel of Luke, the 17th chapter. May you receive a word of hope, encouragement, and understanding from this story. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priest." And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be.
In Sue Monk Kidd's novel, The Secret Life of Bees, the character named August says, "Stories have to be told or they die. And if they die, we can't remember who we are or why we're here." In Unbreakable, Andrew Lippa tells the story of LGBTQ people in the U.S. over the last 120 years. And to do so, he draws on the stories of Jane Addams, the first woman to win a Nobel Peace Prize in 1931 and an open lesbian activist, Lim Billings, President John Kennedy's best friend, a closeted gay man, Sylvia Rivera and the transgender community she nurtured, and after whom Sylvia's House, a shelter for homeless queer youth at MCC New York, is named, and through the personification of AIDS and its impact on a generation. Some of these stories are hard to hear, including the song "Already Dead" that the chorus will perform in just a moment. This song is the story of a young man expelled from Harvard after a trial before the honor court because of, quote, homosexual practices. The university sent a letter to his parents saying, "It is with the deepest regret that I inform you that your son has involved himself in difficulties so extraordinarily great that the president has directed me to advise him to withdraw from the university at once." At once. Listen.
Why does it feel like I'm already dead? Why does it feel like I'll never get out of this place? Never get out of this place. Why does it feel like my choices have led to this moment where nothing is clear? nothing is here. I want to push my way up, all the way up, find what's up above. I want to make my way up, spend my day up where there's light and love. Why am I here?
Why are you in this place?
Why am I here?
Who are you here? Who are you here in this place?
Why am I here?
Somewhere that's warm, somewhere full of new life, would I be happier then? Maybe I'd meet a young man on the bridge, maybe he'd smile a beguiling hello, smile a hello, then I might push my way. What if I'm somewhere that's warm, somewhere full of new life? Could I be happier then? Couldn't I live with the true thing instead? Couldn't I live with the man in my bed? Keep that unsaid until I can push my way up, all the way up, live where angels dwell. I want to make my way up, all the way up, farther from this hell. God, are you listening at all? God, do you know how it feels to be broken and spent, not knowing how to repent? God, if you're listening at all, help me look back so I'll understand what it is that they wanted from me, what I wanted myself. I'm not alone.
Guilty of homosexual practices.
Right. I'm not alone.
Guilty of homosexual practices.
Right. I know he's there.
Guilty of homosexual practices.
Stories must be told or they die. And we cannot remember who we are or why we're here. This is another story that's hard to hear. 10 lepers approach Jesus, and they keep their distance as they're required to do, but they cry out for mercy. Who knows what they were expecting? They asked only for mercy, only for compassion. And you have to understand leprosy, the wasting, killing kind that these men had started with a small lesion, but then it ate away the flesh. It was literally a living death. The most horrible thing about it was the isolation it brought. Lepers were to cry, unclean, unclean, wherever they went, so people could keep their distance, and were condemned to live alone in ghettos outside of towns. Those with the disease were banished from society and exiled from home and families. Dr. A.B. MacDonald once wrote about leprosy. For some reason, there is an attitude to leprosy different from the attitude to any other disease. It is associated with shame and horror and carries in some mysterious way a sense of guilt. Although innocently acquired, like most contagious troubles, shunned and despised, frequently do lepers consider taking their own lives, and some do. You know where I'm going with this, don't you? Lord, in your mercy. And Jesus said, go and show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were made clean. That is, they were healed. Their bodies were restored. And one of the 10, when he saw that he was healed, turned back and took hold of Jesus and thanked him. And it would be fine if we were finished here, but this next line we've got to hear. And he, the one who thanked Jesus, was a Samaritan. Samaritans, despised by the Jewish religious establishment, accused of heresy and perversion of the faith. You know where I'm going with this, right? But one, when he realized that he was healed, went back to say thank you. One, when he trusted that he was healed, that he was whole, that he was good, that he was loved, began to live like it. Can't you imagine the scene? These 10 people living through this unbelievably strange experience, you might say a queer experience, are walking along and find themselves whole and healed. But 9 of the 10 are doubting it. It's not hard to imagine why, is it? They've been the subject of hate and derision and oppressive rules, and it's hard not to carry that stuff with you, even when you can see the evidence for yourself. Even when you can see that your limbs are restored and you are healthy and whole, you still hear the voices, you still see the pointing fingers. I can imagine the other 9 all the way to the temple. Is it still holding? Am I still good? What about this spot here? Is it all right? Because that's how it is, isn't it? When the religious authorities have had it in for us, when we've been shunned by society, exiled from family, condemned to hell. But no. Look at us. Look at how beautiful we are. Look at how we love. Look at how we live. Look at the real us, not the caricatures, but the character. Oh, what a mixed up world that would hate us for who we love. Oh, what a mixed up world that wants to break us. But here's the truth. Our bones break. Our relationships break, and our plans and our dreams and our wills might break, and our hearts break. But our spirits are unbreakable. When we learn this, we become what Henry Nouwen calls wounded healers, people who are able to turn what threatens to break them into blessings. Henry Nouwen is one of the most beloved spiritual writers of all times. He was a Catholic priest, but his influence spread far beyond the Catholic Church. Protestants study Nouwen. Evangelicals revere Henry Nouwen. I was introduced to Henry Nouwen by a friend when I was going through an especially challenging time. Two books, she said, that you might like, The Inner Voice of Love and The Genesee Diary. I started with The Inner Voice of Love and realized immediately it was unlike any other spiritual work that I had read. Here's what Henry Nouwen wrote in the introduction. This book is my secret journal. It was written during the most difficult period of my life, from December 1987 to June 1988. That was a time of extreme anguish during which I wondered whether I would be able to hold on to my life. Everything came crashing down: my self-esteem, my energy to live and work, my sense of being loved, my hope for healing, my trust in God. That book spoke to me, lifted me up during a trying time. And so after I read it, I read Henry's Genesee Diary, his diary of the time that he spent 7 months in an abbey in upstate New York. I started to keep a diary while I was at Genesee Abbey. January 29th, 2019. I don't usually keep a diary, but things were happening so fast on my sabbatical, and I knew I would start to forget them quickly, so I started a diary. I'm at Genesee Abbey because of Henry Nouwen's book, The Genesee Diary. Years ago, Mona West, when she was my spiritual director, told me about The Inner Voice of Love and The Genesee Diary. Both meant a tremendous amount to me. So when I applied for a sabbatical from the Lilly Corporation, I knew that if they granted our application, I would spend part of my time at Genesee Abbey in silent retreat. No cell phone reception. No internet. Middle of nowhere. And as I made my plan, I told myself, you know what, I've got to do this long enough that I can't just sleep through it if it's horrible. So instead of 2 or 3 days, 8 days at Genesee Abbey. It snowed almost every day I was there. There had been 15 inches of snow the week before. It was difficult to get from the house I was staying in, the half mile down the road, to the sanctuary. But I went as often as I could, walked through the snow, because I wanted to walk where Henry Nouwen walked. I wanted to see the things that he saw. I wanted to see the fields where they raised the wheat and where they make the bread. And I wanted to see if any of the monks that he shared with me in his diary were still living. And some of them were, including Brother Christian, who is tall and lanky and white-headed now, and who was so excited when he saw me come in with my UT sweatshirt. And he started talking to me about Bobby Lane. And he didn't realize that Bobby Lane retired from professional football the year I was born. But time moves slowly at the Abbey. And I also had the opportunity to see from a distance, because we were kept from the monks by a gate and a rail, even in the sanctuary. I saw that Reverend Father John Eudes was still alive. Former abbot of the Genesee Abbey, he was the spiritual director to Henry Nouwen. He was the voice of wisdom who lifted up Henry Nouwen. And oh, how I thought I would love to meet him. But he stayed well behind the rail. And when services ended each day, his caretaker would take his wheelchair back into the monastery. I wanted to do something, though, to tie my time there to all that the Genesee Diary had meant to me. And then I had an idea. Henry Nouwen wrote in the Genesee Diary about how he was having difficulty. As a man who worked in spirituality, he realized, I'm writing about prayer instead of praying. I'm writing about blessing instead of being a blessing. He went to Genesee Abbey to get away from all that and just to rest in the presence of God. He said, I'm losing touch with the parts of my faith that are important to me. And so one of the things he writes about is how a painting of the Virgin Mary holding the child Jesus helped bring back his reverence for the Holy Mother. And I happened to find in the gift store a package of cards with that painting on them. And I said, I'm going to take one of those cards to Brother Christian and see if he will write a blessing in it for me. So I took him the card, and he was very befuddled about why I wanted a blessing from him, but he said, yes, I will do it. And I arranged to pick it up the next day. Well, then you might remember the end of January 2019, the winter vortex. There was no way I was going to get to that sanctuary each day, especially for prayers at 3:30 a.m., 6:30 a.m., 7 a.m., noon, 5:30, and 7 o'clock. There was no way. So I thought I might have one more opportunity. So I trudged through the snow. Yes, I did fall. There was ice under the snow. Who knew? And I trudged up there, and as I came in, Brother Christian came smiling towards me, and he said, thank you for your prayers. And he handed me the card, which now sits on my desk. But here's what happened. That night, I wasn't supposed to be at the sanctuary. Reverend Father John Eudes' caretaker wheeled him out beyond the rail, where the common folk were. And I went just a little bit fangirl, which is very embarrassing, because here's a 92-year-old monk in a wheelchair, and here's me, giddy. But I'd been carrying my book around with me, the Genesee Diary, and I carried it up, and I tried to rush real fast, and this book is so important to me, and Henry Nouwen is so important to me, and you were so important to him, and I'm just so glad to meet you, and that's why I'm here. And he nodded. And then she took him on down. But when he got to the end of the ramp, he told his caretaker, if she wants to talk with me, bring her down. And so she came to get me, and I got to spend some time talking to Reverend Father John Eudes, and I told him again how important he was to me and Henry Nouwen. And I read him the little part from the book about the painting, and said, I got Brother Christian to write on a card, and I'm so excited. And he said, Henry, Henry, Henry. And then he said, so you're a Protestant. And And I said, yes, please forgive me. And he said, if you come back, I think I could make a Catholic out of you. I thought, you don't know, you don't know. But I said, that might be. Father John Eudes, 92 years old. I read him that little section in the book about the painting, and he said, I'll give you a blessing, which he did. But my whole time, of course, with him had already been a blessing. And now my story has a Henry Nouwen story and a John Eudes story. And did I mention that Henry Nouwen, beloved teacher and spiritual guide to millions, was gay? That the crisis that he went through that became the inner voice of love was his coming out to himself as a gay man? That he also wrote in the introduction to this book, my crisis of faith was triggered by the sudden interruption of a friendship. Among my many friends, one had been able to touch me in a way I had never been touched before. Our friendship encouraged me to allow myself to be loved and cared for with greater trust and confidence. It seemed as if a door of my interior life had been opened, a door that had remained locked during my youth and most of my adult life. Here's what Henry also wrote in the introduction, and I want to share a little bit of it with you. 8 years after my spiritual crisis, I was prompted by my friend Wendy to read my secret journal again. I was able to look back at this period of my life and see it as a time of intense purification that had led me gradually to a new inner freedom, a new hope, and a new creativity. The spiritual imperatives I had put down now seemed less private and even possibly of some value to others. Wendy and several other friends encouraged me not to hide this painful experience from those who have come to know me through my various books on the spiritual life. They reminded me that the books I had written since my period of anguish could not have been written without the experience I had gained by living through that time. They asked, "Why keep this away from those who have been nurtured by your spiritual insights? Isn't it important for your friends close by and far away to know the high cost of these insights? Wouldn't they find it a source of consolation to see that light and darkness, hope and despair, love and fear are never very far away from each other? And that spiritual freedom often requires a fierce spiritual battle." Their questions finally convinced me to give these pages to Bill Berry and make them available in this book. I hope and pray that I did the right thing. Our stories have to be told or they die. And if our stories die, we can't remember who we are or why we're here, and others don't know that they're not alone. I thank God for those who came before us who told their stories. I thank God for Andrew Lippa and those who are still writing the stories, and the Capital City Men's Chorus who is still singing them, and you who are still living them. During our offering, the chorus is going to be singing for us again. They'll be singing Survivor. I want to share the beginning of that with you. If you are unbreakable, you're wakeable. And maybe then you'll rise when others fall. Challenges. Everybody gets their share obstacles. Everybody has their share. Everybody deals with pain. Everybody faces rain. Everybody could complain, but we are survivors. We are the ones who stand together. We are survivors.